Okay. So we're going again. This is the Noontime Constitutional. And it's balmy. It's 58 here. Did you can hear it? Pretty cloudless day. I finished up yet another essay. Got ready to distribute it, and I think I'm going to start throwing out much wider distribution here, and see what comes of it, you know. Grow a little weary of preaching to some kind of a choir. And this is a typical, you know, 4 hours worth of a labor. That would probably make more in 4 hours than I make in 2 or 3 weeks of fixing computers. Not that I would be letting go of the day job anytime soon, but it'd be really great if one of these essays really caught hold and really made kind of a splash. That would be fantastic. And I probably need to get better at throwing my stuff out there so that it's accessible. Maybe even this one would be probably pretty good for something like Lou Rockwell, and it would be quite well. I'd like it to get to that level. I think that would be exciting and interesting, and I don't know what kind of money it would ultimately produce. You know, I don't want to really get into becoming a publisher. I want other people to publish it and to make money. And I want to get the proceeds. I don't know if I really want to get weird to the point to where, you know, I can't say that. You know, Gary North does subscriptions. You know, you have to pay to touch Gary North on some level. And so that's pretty encouraging right there. But yeah, I don't know if I can claim being particularly prolific, you know, as such. I think in that to do something of a book length, and honestly, it's a little, you know, I think to a certain degree it takes away from the essay writing, but, you know, it's still there. And if these essays started to generate some real income on some level, that would be absolutely, I mean, I would just be so happy. May be more useful to me to throw this stuff up on the quasi-indefatigable Zenlith website and see what happens. You know, I would want Blogspot Blogger to handle the big heavy load, the heavy lifting, and you know, because it can handle bandwidth where I can't. But to kind of get myself turned up in this way, you know. You end up kind of being a freelancer anyway, and that's not a bad thing, you know. Tend to throw yourself and put yourself in circumstances that make these things possible, stir this stuff up. So I guess I'm wanting some stir out of this. I always try to internationalize. Well, no, not always, but I typically do. Internationalize my writing as much as I can, while being really straightforward that yes, I am an American, and that's where I born and I grew up. I'm 45 years old. Here I am. And how these things interplay. You know, I'm still wanting by 50 to celebrate my birthday in London, and I would really like for it not to be the last economic thing I ever do, because, you know, totally destroyed my family's economy because I'm a... because this one trip, you know. I would hope that it would be just simply incidental to something else. It'd be really fantastic if I was already living in Shetland and I just happened to be going down to London to transact some business and just make sure it happens on my birthday and say, come on, let's go. We're going to go down to London. I've got to go take care of some stuff there and let's go have lunch. I want to celebrate my birthday in London. And so, I'm really quite, really quite interested in what happens here. I think it's about time to go ahead and start trying to find the market for stuff. Going out and doing this. I keep going over it and going over it and going over it. It's like, okay, well, this is good enough. So I'm going to throw it out there. And, you know, you keep fasting this stuff. And I have a thought that ultimately the Ascendant family is just going to be a large collection of essays on that subject, on the whole idea of the family should be the most important. And I finally think I finally got to the point where I say, you know what, you know, if these mass shootings that have happened recently have taught me anything, the biggest thing they've taught me is that you can't stop evil things from happening. You can only do what you can about them. You know, you can sit there and say, oh, we're going to take this action, the larger universe, and do that. But in a family-centered society, the only power you would have to make these kinds of things happen is within your own family. You know? You would have to know on an individual basis, do you want to trust this child with a gun? You know? You can certainly say, you know, we love going hunting. We do that responsibly by sending our kids out to hunter safety classes and teach them how to use a gun. Take them to the shooting range and make sure they have lots of experience so that they know how to, so they're comfortable with the weapon and that, you know, most of the worst things that happen with guns are guns in the hands of people that don't know what they're doing. End up shooting themselves, end up hurting themselves, end up hurting somebody else that they didn't intend to hurt. And that with a modicum of training, you know, these cease to be real problems. And when something bad does happen, it is an exception. You know, there isn't going to be some, some problem. You know, it isn't going to be, oh, this is a societal problem which we need to attack with draconian measures. You know, it doesn't become that. You know, I always hearken back to the not too distant past you know, when somebody, you know, for something along the lines of the whole gun ban thing that's going on in the United States, to say, well, you know, I don't, you know, and they say, well, you know, we have to do this because we want the incidence of this to go down. And you're going, how will banning weapons get this to go down? You know, pick a random year from the 50s. It says there was no gun ban at all. As far as I'm aware of, nothing was banned. You know, I may be wrong. I have not studied this at all. Except to say, I'm sure we have more gun bans now than we had then. I said, and do we have a resultant increase in, you know, mass slaying done with weapons, with rifles and with shotguns and stuff? And of course, the answer will come back, no. In fact, they were practically unheard of. And you go, okay, so the problem isn't the guns. So quit talking about the guns as being either the problem or the solution. Just because it wasn't the problem then, we have to decide what is the difference between then and now. It would be interesting. I would have to, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see that it would be something along the lines of a sense of hopelessness, a sense of not being in control of your life, a sense of, you know, life isn't worth living, a sense of real frustration that plays itself out this way. And you go, okay, this is, I think that's something you could do something about. I said, if you're so concerned about people that have guns in their hands, why don't you survey them about where they feel like their desperation comes from, where they feel like these feelings of hopelessness, where do they lie? Because I think you'll be totally surprised that it'll come back. Well, it'll be totally surprising to those of a liberal bent. I'd say that most of these people are going to say, encroaching government. Feeling like the economy and society are starting to shut down in favor of a huge government that dominates all things, that regulates all things. And in its rather silly, backhanded sort of, oh no, we're not trying to do this to you when that's exactly what they're trying to do to you sort of way. But that's what's bothering these people, and that's what may cause a person who actually owns a firearm right now, you know, are arguably our most dangerous people, those who can carry around. Heck, you can make it a point, because I think there's probably a registry in most states that they have concealed carry. Those are the most dangerous people, the people that have actually gone through some kind of process to be able to carry a concealed weapon, one that you can't see. And find out what pushes their buttons, what makes them feel hopeless, what frightens them, what might motivate them to take their weapon and do some damage. I think you would get some incredibly honest opinions from these guys, although I think that the question isn't asked because everybody's scared to death about what they would say, and that it was mostly a function of government, and that it's really quite obvious. In the 1950s, our government was far less intrusive than it is now. Didn't tax as heavily, didn't regulate as heavily. You know, the government was not that big, smelly, fat guy that, you know, that comes knocking on your door on a regular basis. Back in those days, government was somebody who lived 5 miles away that you could easily just ignore. And you didn't have to get involved with particularly. Pay him a little bit of money, and he'll leave you alone. That was government then. You know, and I'm not saying that's necessarily the solution, but you have to understand that if that came out, that could be a possible solution to the problem, there would be all kinds of political wrangling to make sure, number one, nothing ever happened about that. You think the gun lobby is powerful. You've never been up against the government lobby. You know, because, you know, as far as I'm aware, it's never been realistically challenged on a particular basis at all. No, you know, very few people question the government's power to pretty much do whatever it feels like doing. You can always pick up citizens who readily throw out their interest in this. And, you know, golly. Anyway. Okay, we're at the halfway point. I'm turning back around to go back. I want to get this all done. It's 2:00. I've got to go. Got to go help with setting up a new network for people who were victims of a fire. Oh my gosh! Their buildings had a fire happening. I hope it wasn't. Hope it wasn't due to some sort of negligence on anybody's part. I hope it was just incidental, accidental, or whatever. I like all these people. I don't think bad to happen to any of them. I don't want any of them to be complicit in something that might cause trouble. What's the point of that? Anyway, so I don't know if, you know, I'm thinking maybe this one could go to some place like Lou Rockwell. Or if not there, maybe he might be willing to suggest another place where it might be better suited, and to ask him if there is a topic. You know, if there's a specific topic that he thinks is missing from his website, that I might write toward. And I, you know, one doesn't want to get rude in the whole issue of, you know, but how else do you access those kinds of people? How else do you make how else do you start rolling around in those kinds of circles? It really ends up being kind of a networking sort of thing. And I hope I've gotten to the point to where I am where I'm good enough that I can ask questions of these kinds of people, and they say, you know what, you're really quite good, let me throw you in some direction, or hey, I'd like to publish it right here, you know. And although I can say that I'm not a, you know, that Addie State doesn't end up being my, you know, I don't have a problem with governance on a certain level. Because beyond that, I start having problems, you know. Anything beyond the family level needs to be done in the way of more of an association, like I was saying this morning, you know, more of an alliance or an association between families in a neighborhood or in a community, but not that you become beholden to it, you know. I would do it more like a store, you know. I think hospitals, like for instance, may need to function more like a store, you know, more of like a cooperative. And they'll come in, they'll treat you. They may treat you for more expensively than if you were a member of a cooperative. And that would give you an impulse to join the cooperative, especially if they said, hey, you know what? We have doctors. We have a doctor or two. And, you know, they are available to you cheaply as a member, you know. And then it can go anywhere from being a little neighborhood clinic, community clinic, up to, you know, where you'd have a huge hospital, but that you would be kind of a partner in that sort of a thing, kind of a university network. Not that that university controls you, but that you say, okay, we're going to be a part of that network, and we participate in that. If there's a situation that we can't handle here in the clinic, we stick them in an ambulance, put them on a helicopter, however you want to frankly do it, and you get them to that hospital. And, you know, I think that would be an excellent way to handle the whole health care issue. You know, is to say, let's do it that way. You know, the benefits of membership. And you can have people that make use of it that aren't members, you know. You just say, hey, you know, I said, hey, the offer's always made, would you like to become a member? You know, the membership fees are this much money a month. And it's like, well, no. And you go, okay. And you can make it on that kind of level. If you're the kind of guy like me who frankly avoids all doctors and only makes use of health care when it's absolutely almost catastrophic. You know, it doesn't make much sense for me to be a member on that level. You know, a smart institution would say, well, you know, you can be a catastrophic care member, you know, and you get certain cuts this way and you get certain cuts that way. And we, you know, and we do it that way. I would be happy to be a member like that. Sadly, in New Mexico, there is no catastrophic care. As far as I know, it's illegal. You can't do it here. You can't have that kind of health policy administered in New Mexico. You know, I don't know how you get it handled. Otherwise, I'm sure you can go to another state or to an independent entity and get that kind of health care there or get that kind of insurance there to cover catastrophic things. And otherwise, you know, if you just go to the doctor's office for some reason, you know, it just becomes, you know, you just go, well, no, I pay for this service. And they go, oh, no, you don't understand. All we do is take insurance. We don't accept actual money. That's how I'd like it to go. Because I think the biggest line item on my withholding from my checks, you know, it's a toss-up between the pension fund remittance and what I pay for health insurance. I think both of them are rather large. I think I pay more for health care than I do for housing. I think I pay more for health care, something that I rarely use, than I pay for food. No, that's not true. It's more than I pay in utilities, I think. I think that's a fair assessment. So, maybe that's something to look at when the opportunity presents itself. When I finally say, you know what? I said, I'm using up, you know, although I can't think when that this would ever occur, that my day job, which frankly involves a lot of sitting in an office waiting for something to break somewhere, would particularly interfere with my writing. But I don't think that would really happen. That would really come to pass. As usual, I'm typically very happy to God for the circumstance I have now. Although I'm willing to change my circumstances, it isn't because I don't like my job. My job's fine. You know, I want to move someplace else. I want to live someplace else. Of course, that means I'm going to lose my job in the process of doing that. So, it's something that we'll have to wait until money is no object. And until I really become, I don't know, what am I saying, wealthy? I don't think it's really a question of being wealthy. It's a question of, you know, money's not really a big problem. You know, if something's needed, I can go out and buy it. Not extravagantly on any level, you know. I have no interest in living an extravagant life. You know. Although I've never No, I have traveled. I have traveled with work. And I don't find traveling terribly interesting. It gets boring fast. So, you know, to go from one place to another place to another place for fun isn't interesting to me at all. You know, I'm just not wanting to do that particularly. But yeah, I'd like to take some time, you know, it would be more of a seeing what this does, and then after a time saying, okay, how do I want to make some changes to this to make it more interesting, you know, whether that's going to happen in the matter of 5 years, or 2 years, or whatever. And that at some point, relatively soon, you know, certainly before I turn 50, you know, I want to be in a position of being able to say, I want to live here, and that it isn't going to be a problem, you know. Like, say, for instance, I know that to get leave to remain in the UK is a question of having £50,000, about $100,000, in a bank account there. And setting up a business, of course, you know, mine's freelance. I would be freelance self-employed without really giving much thought to. We want you to employ some people. You go, well, I don't know if I really need to employ any people. You know, I would certainly take advantage of local resources. Might have a personal secretary locally, you know, to screen phone calls. This is the most important thing in my world, is to keep people at bay. You know. Oh man, I hope I make it back to the office. It's starting to cramp up. Oh boy. So, you know. And I think that's what ultimately happens. Not that you set a goal to have these things, but just as time passes, the need for it arises, and the ability to get it happens. And you say, well, I said the whole point is, right now I write one essay every couple of days. How can I change things so that I can write two? Knowing that if I write two, I will get, you know, I will get a resultant bump in income, stuff like that. And I can concentrate on other things. So, anyway. And so, oh boy, I really do hope I make it. Starting to get closer and closer and closer to it just coming out. Seems I need to go faster. Walk faster. Hope I don't need to run. Because if I stop running, I think I'll start coming. And that is bad. I need to jog a little bit here. Oh, man. Get shaking stuff that I don't want shaking. Oh. Anyway, you know, and that doesn't change the essence of who you are. And you don't get cocky about it, you know. Any given morning, it could all kind of fall apart. Oh. already thinking I'm pretty glad I didn't get rid of the blog spot thing particularly. It's still there. I may want to be using it more to take care of things. Oh man, I am going. I am golden. Uh-oh, I am golden. Man. Oh boy. Up the road. Oh, golly. There was some problems holding it in. Oh, gosh. Pretty diuretic. Anyway. Oh. Oh. Well. Oh, man. I take care of that to a certain extent. Oh. Made a mess. A little bit of a mess. I got a hole in my pants. Marvelous. For dirt. Be more careful down the trees. Oh, well, definitely have to go to the bathroom again once we get the office. I think we've handled the worst of it. Pardon me. So, I think circumstances are going to drive me back toward another way of being, and that will start opening doors. I wouldn't be surprised if one of those doors had opened. Is somebody saying, heck, this guy wants to live in Shetland? You know, their local newspaper would say, golly, do we have any capacity to handle the syndication rights to somebody? Especially if they come in, they said, he's already he already sells to a lot of different places. Can we somehow integrate that in our business, you know, make some money off of him? And you go, hey, maybe worth it to me. you know, but, you know, honestly, I think if the income from freelancing ended up being lucrative enough to handle stability, to provide some stability, especially if it was more, you know, we sell books and we're getting a regular income from the sale of those compilations almost. That might feel good. That might help Lisa go over the edge and say, you know what, Jay, you consistently make this much, especially if it happened for a couple of years. And she said, you know, the money keeps coming in. It fluctuates a little bit, but it's always at a large and that's pretty important. You know, hey, for Lisa's life, that's close to paramount. You know, for just, I don't wanna, you know, she has to run a household. And the amount of money she would have to be able to do that is really quite, you know, that's central. Since what she does doesn't directly earn money, you know, she needs to feel pretty confident with how much money she has to play with. Maybe we can get to the point to where she only gets part of it, but right now she gets every single penny. Everything flows through her. She just doesn't yell at me when sometimes I send things. I think as long as I'm careful and it goes through, you know, what's this? Anyway. Oh. Anyway. What's it for that? Oh. That'll be good for her. And to be able to say, a certain amount of this money goes here, and a certain amount is Jay's money for once in his life. I have money not to keep it particularly separate. Not to say she can't touch it, but to say it isn't figured into the yearly expenses type of stuff. You know. Oh. Okay, well, I'm in a place where I really don't need to be recording. So this is it.